Welcome back to Ball Don't Lie right here on 104.9 The Horn. It is a Blue Monday edition of Ball Don't Lie. You can always be a part of the show. Please do hit us up on the Specs text line, 512-337-3776. You also can hit us up via Twitter. I'm at Rod Babers in the Twitterverse. My man Harj is at Hardball Harj in the Twitterverse. And my man Patrick Davis at It's Patrick Davis in the Twitterverse. I want to talk some Texas football here. We got some Cowboys discussion coming up in the 6 o'clock for you Cowboys fans. Harsh Knock Life. You said your Harsh Knock Life is going to be about Spencer Rattler?
Yeah, man.
What?
Where
does this come from?
Well, you know, this guy has been much maligned, and I wanted to do some research on him.
Oh, you're a Spencer Rattler fan?
No, I'm going to get into that.
You're a Spencer Rattler apologist.
Not so fast, my friend. I think some of this was brought on himself, so I want to showcase and broadcast the reasons why I want to bring this out. Because it could be a redemption, or it could be you're exactly who we thought you were.
They at one point they were saying he's going to be the number one overall pick
in
the draft. I remember that was real conversation, and that's because he's going to get that Lincoln Riley stamp of approval. I mean, honestly, PK has had a hand in his downfall. PK's game plan against Spencer Rattler and Lincoln Riley was so damn good that it ended up getting him benched, and then Caleb Williams comes in and PK doesn't know what the hell to do because he has no scouting report, no evaluation at all on Caleb Williams.
Right.
And Caleb Williams ends up pulling out the big victory over Texas and the huge comeback, greatest comeback in the history, or at least gotta say biggest meltdown in the history of Texas football. But still, I mean, that's interesting because if he actually meets expectations or meets that ceiling that was one day projected for him to be the number one overall pick, yeah, that could be crazy.
Right.
All right, so we'll get into that coming up at Harsh Knock Life. Looking forward to that. We'll talk about college. Speaking of quarterbacks, we'll talk about college football's top 25 quarterbacks. There's a list out by our friends at 24/7 Sports. We'll get into that. And Arch Manning has set his official visit dates, and we'll get to that. So speaking of quarterbacks, we'll talk a lot of quarterbacks. And there is a and Texas over/under win total out from the Wise Guys in Vegas. So we'll get into that as well. All right, so I want to get into this list first. This is done by Brad Crawford over at 24/7 Sports, and he lists college football's 25 best quarterbacks entering the 2022 season, and he ranks them. I'll spare you giving your entire list. I'll just give you obviously the prospects and the players that you care most about. I think it's interesting that because I look at players that Texas is going to have to play that are considered really good players. That's how I break things down. And the number one quarterback on this list, I don't think it's a surprise to anybody. By the way, you're Spencer Rattler?
Mm-hmm.
He's number 8 on here.
Interesting.
They got him as a top 10 quarterback in college football. But he was considered to be, like I said,
he was
a number one overall pick at one point. So, yeah, I can see that. But I digress. We'll get into that in a Harsh Knock Life coming up next segment, so you want to tune in for that. But here is a start at number one here. They got Bryce Young. So Texas football will play against what is considered to be by some maybe the best college quarterback returning in college football, and that is Bryce Young. I don't know how he projects to the next level. I'm not sure about his NFL projections.
They have him pretty high.
They got him high.
Yeah, they got him high.
I don't know if they got him as the best prospect overall, though. I don't know if that is the case. But, yes, in terms of him, in terms of his college accolades and what he's accomplished, he is the returning Heisman Trophy winner.
Yep.
So, yeah, he that dude. He's that dude.
He that dude.
He's that dude. So Texas will play the best quarterback in the country.
Yep.
And that's big. And C.J. Stroud's number 2 on the list. They got Caleb Williams, going back to, with the story we just talked about. He's number 3 on the list, so Lincoln Riley got him one. How about this, Harsh? Dylan Gabriel.
I really like that kid. I told you when you first brought him up last week, I said, I really enjoyed watching him when he was at UCF. He was a difference maker for them.
They got him at number 4.
Mm.
They got him as a top 5 quarterback. So according to this list, Texas is going to play two of the top 4 best quarterbacks in college football this season.
And one that was just left outside of this, and I'll let you finish going through
it. Go ahead.
But one that was just left outside of this, and we've seen him long enough that we know exactly who he is and we know how he performs, is one Spencer Sanders.
Yeah, they had a they have a list of basically kind of honorable mention guys, quarterbacks who just missed the cut, as they describe it. And he's Oregon's Bo Nix, Michigan's Cade McNamara, Stanford's Tanner Mordecai, Georgia's Stetson Bennett, and Oklahoma State's Spencer Sanders. Also, yep. throughout A&M's Max Johnson, Penn State's Sean Clifford, BYU's Jaren Hall, Fresno State's Jake Haner,
yep.
LSU's Miles Brennan, and UCLA's Dorian Thompson-Robinson. But you're right. Spencer Sanders just missing the cut here. And then you got Dylan Gabriel. There's no other quarterback on this list Longhorns will play, but they do have KJ Jefferson's number five, by the way, which I think might be too high for KJ Jefferson.
Definitely, because he just don't show me he can throw the ball that well.
Yeah,
he's just a big bruiser when he's running with the ball. I don't look at him as a traditional quarterback either.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I don't know if I'd have him number five. I think he ended up being a really good player, but I don't know if he could be number five. They got Herndon Hooker from Tennessee at number six. Grayson McCall for Coastal Carolina at number seven. Spencer Rattler, who Harge is going to break down, coming up next in Harsh Knock Live, South Carolina now at number eight. Devin Leary of NC State at number nine. And Tyler Van Dyke, who also, I remember man KD being a fan of Tyler Van Dyke when he was on the show talking about him. So he's at number 10 for Miami. I like Sam Hartman of Wake Forest, not as a NFL prospect, but as a college player in that system they run. He is almost perfect for the system that they run, so they got him at number 11. But here's the one we got to get into. Oh, by the way, Cam Rising.
Yes.
Former Longhorn at number 13 at Utah. So shout out to Cam Rising making some plays. But here's a very interesting, I guess, the ranking here, because they have Quinn Ewers at number 18, Arch. Now, technically, Quinn Ewers hasn't won the starting job. Technically, he hasn't, but they already have him as the 18th best quarterback in the country. What say you about this particular ranking?
I mean, it really goes to upside, right? It goes to that part where you say, all right, this is the upside for this particular player. This is where they project him later on. And for him to be there, although he has not been named the starter, we know how this goes down. It is going to be a very interesting offseason for the University of Texas quarterbacks. And the reason why we say that is because when Jordan Addison was here, who was in the picture? It was
Quinn Ewers, man. Yeah.
Every photograph that's been taken has been with Quinn Ewers somewhere around all the players on the team that are the playmakers during that time. So what do you always say?
It's an election.
It's an election year. You got to run your race and make sure that everybody's on the same page. Right now, he seems to be winning the race, and that's probably why all these quarterbacks are being ranked this way and him being the one that is representing the University of Texas.
It's, you know, what goes on behind the burn orange curtain we're not privy to. We don't know. But if you're just talking about perception being reality, the perception is right now that there is not a huge gap. There's not a huge separation between Hudson Card and Quinn Ewers, even if Hudson Card is in the lead. There's not a huge gap. And if that is the case, if you're looking at rate of development, Hudson Card should be much further ahead in this competition with Quinn Ewers. It shouldn't be as close as it is. If it is close, based on rate of development, you could conservatively predict and project that Quinn Ewers will surpass him in training camp sometime next year. Now, that could be wrong because Hudson Card could end up having a great offseason and end up winning the job like he did last season. He did win the job initially. Like I said, history tells me Mack Brown choosing between a Chris Sims and a Major Applewhite, whether you think he made the right choice or not, he chose the upside of the quarterback with the higher ceiling with Chris Sims. Same thing with Vince Young and Chance Mock. I love Chance Mock. That's my dog. But Mack Brown went with VY, quarterback with the higher ceiling and the higher upside, higher rated quarterback, right? And the only time that he chose the lower rated quarterback in one of those competitions between, a five-star and a lower-rated quarterback was when he chose Colt McCoy over Jevin Snead, who was a five-star. And that was, in my opinion, that all the history that I remember, that was, even Mack Brown said it, that was the players coming to Mack Brown in the offseason and saying, hey, Colt's the guy. And then Mack Brown confirming those, confirming basically those references by the players with his eye test, because I remember Max saying not only did the players tell him that Colt was the guy, but also Colt McCoy threw more touchdowns than interceptions. He threw more touchdowns than Jevin Snead did, and he threw fewer interceptions than Jevin Snead did, basically. Yeah. So that that basically was the competition for him, and Mack Brown decided Colt was the guy. I don't know if that is the case for Hudson Card, because like I've said before, a quarterback competition is just an election. In that locker room, those are the guys, you got to get their votes. You also got to get the coaches' votes. It helps to have the votes of the media and the fans, right? Those are now, but you need the votes in the locker room, and you need the votes of the coaches. And I'm not sure right now, based on what I've seen. Like I said, every time you watch a video, Quinn Ewers is in the video. Every time it's a picture, it's Quinn Ewers. When the players are at another game for another sport, I see Quinn Ewers. I don't see Hudson Card.
Come to death row.
I don't
That's
see.
That's what he's doing. It's all in the video.
I don't see Hudson Card. I don't. So public perception is, well, Quinn Ewers is the guy.
Yep.
All the players are hanging out with Quinn Ewers, recruiting Jordan Addison. I don't see Hudson Card. So, my take would get in the picture. Hudson Card, get in the picture. Go hang out with the guys. I hope that's happening behind the scenes and that perception is not reality. Because right now, to me, the perception is that Hudson Card is losing the election.
Yeah.
He's losing
that's
the election.
Fair. That's a fair assessment if in court of public opinion, right?
Yeah, so I don't know what Sark's thinking. About.
Yeah. We don't know what he's seeing.
That's why these lists are saying Quinn Ewers is the guy.
Right.
Because the perception is, he's losing that quarterback competition. Even if the spring game, some said Hudson Card outperformed Quinn Ewers.
I would agree with that. I thought that he looked better, and we got a chance to see some different types of ball placement by Hudson Card. We got a chance to really see him own the offense. That's all we were hearing during the offseason, during the spring. They were like, he's got a real good grasp of the offense. Of course he should. It's the second year in it. Mm-hmm. And all the voices are the same. So he should have the keys to the ignition on this one right here. But as the season, as the summer goes on, which starts what? Right after Memorial? That's when the summer workouts really start to pick up and they're going to be getting after it right then. That is when we're going to see some probable separation during that time. If not, then we're going to wait until we get to the fall camp. Then we'll see from there. But I think the decision is going to be made long before that, depending on what happens this summer.
Something else that's hurting Hudson Card, if I'm keep staying with the election analogy, his last term hurt him. It's hurting his current run for office.
Right.
His last term was, last season.
Fair.
Whether it be the Arkansas game or Kansas game, whatever, his last term is affecting his ability to win office this time because people are still recollecting that.
Yep.
I'll say this, though, because, I think Texas defense is going to have to, really show up because I think Spencer Sanders, if I have to ask you this, who's the third best quarterback Texas is going to face this year? We all know Bryce Young is going to be the best, and they're saying Dylan Gabriel is going to be the second best in that system with Oklahoma and Jeff Levy. Who is the third best quarterback they're going to face? Is it Spencer Sanders?
It has to be. Experience-wise, I would think so. You start looking at this season and who are the quarterbacks and who is the team that is going to be around him. Every time I look at it, I believe that he would have to be the other guy.
I think if I'm
because there's nobody else that actually has shown up. Dylan Gabriel, Bryce Young, and what would you put? Shuck up at Tech? He got hurt.
If I were to pick somebody, it'd probably be out of
Max Dugan.
No, I'm not. It wouldn't be Dugan. I'd probably end up going either Blake Shapen.
Okay, from
the
Baylor.
Quarterback who just won the job at Baylor.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, we don't know much about Shapen, but.
Never mind, I figured it out. I figured out who's going to be the third best quarterback that he's going
who's
to be.
Who's the third best quarterback Texas is going
Frank
to face?
Harris from UTSA.
Mm.
He is a top-notch quarterback. I followed him a lot last year. He is a top-notch quarterback that's going to have an opportunity. I think he will be the third best.
I would go with either Blake Shapen, who completed 72% of his passes, helped Baylor win the Big 12 title last year, 5 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. They liked him well enough where they gave him the starting job even before training camp. I'd probably go with either JT Daniels and that Graham Harrell system. Let's not forget about JT Daniels,
who is
a career completing close to 64% of his passes, played in different systems, not going to play in the air raid, 32 touchdowns, 16 interceptions. He might be in that category, too. He's got, I think, close to 20 starts in his career. That might be it. I might go with one of those two.
Okay.
And Spencer Sanders, like I said, one of those three.
Yeah.
But now I haven't seen UTSA's quarterback, and I haven't I haven't done any evaluation yet because I haven't started watching Texas opponents yet.
You might want to pay attention to him because he's a mobile quarterback, left-handed quarterback too, which make because Dillon Gabriel's left-handed, so that'll give you a scouting report on how Texas does against lefties, and then he can run. He can run around a little bit.
Oh, no, that gives Texas problems. Remember Jalen Daniels? Hell, Jalen Daniels at Kansas might give Texas some problems next year because he's coming back. I pointed this out before, too. If you're talking about Big 12 quarterbacks, though, you could have the most turnover that you've ever had at the quarterback position in the history of the conference this season. Spencer Sanders is the only kind of he's the only quarterback that started the majority of the games last season that is projected to be the starting quarterback this season. Because Chandler Morris, from a lot of people's perspective, is considered to be the front runner to win the job at TCU because he fits the scheme better. Remember, Garrett Riley, Lincoln Riley's little brother, is running that kind of his air raid scheme there at TCU now, and Max Duggan is not great at throwing the ball. Chandler Morris might be better. So if Max Duggan ends up winning the job, then you would have two, Spencer Sanders and Max Duggan, start the majority of the games last year that also returns to be the starting quarterback. But Tyler Shuck got hurt last year, remember? JT Daniels is right now going to be the starter at West Virginia. Quinn Ewers transfer, going to be the starter at Texas. Maybe. Dillon Gabriel going to be the starter at Oklahoma. He's a transfer. Adrian Martinez, transfer from K-State, going to be the starter there. Jalen Daniels didn't start the majority of the games last year for Kansas. It was another guy that ended up getting hurt. Iowa State, Hunter Deckers, because Purdy was there. Blake Shapen for Gary Bohannon, who at Baylor is going to be the starting quarterback. I remember, he only started, what, three games last year, I believe. So the last time you had this much turnover in the Big 12 at the quarterback position, you had to go back to 2017. Only Will Grier and Peyton Bender returned as starting quarterbacks that year, and in 2013, Clint Shelf, Trevon Boykin returned. That's the year that going into, I think, David Ash ended up getting hurt that next year. In 2014-15, you had Trevon Boykin and Mason Rudolph that returned. So you could have the fewest amount of returning quarterbacks end up starting this year for their teams than you've ever had in history at the conference. Only one team in the Big 12 right now returns the head coach, the OC, and the DC, and the starting quarterback, and that is Kansas.
Mm. And that is why we've all sat here, for the most part, believe that this is probably going to be the most wide-open Big 12 that we've seen in a long time. Because there's so much uncertainty. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that the University of Texas could be playing for a Big 12 championship.
Very true. No, it's a good point about that. All right, real quick, because we want to get to Harsh Knock Life here, but the Arch Manning visits have been set, and Arch Manning will visit Georgia June 4th. He will visit Bama June 11th, and he's visiting Texas June 18th. Good news, Harsh, last visit to Texas. You get the last impression.
That's what I said last time. What did I say when Jordan Addison came here? I was like, ugh. I wish we were last.
Wish you got that last one.
I wish we was the last one. But now you get a chance to be in it. Now you get a chance to talk to him. And they said that he's trying to make his decision before his senior year.
Yeah.
So that's a
great
look.
He wants it out of the way.
That's a great look. That's a great look.
Yeah, and he's on the record for saying that he loves Austin and loves the University of Texas, but he wants to see what Texas is going to do this season. He is also on the record for saying that he believes that Athens, Georgia, is the best college town he's ever been to. He did say that.
Yes, he did.
But he did. He loves Austin, and he's been to Austin, I think, more than he's been to those other places, too, unofficially. So he does love Austin. So we'll see.
Thank you for sharing that with me.
All right. Keep hope alive.
Fingers crossed,
Longhorn fans. All right. Harsh Knock Life.
Coming up next, I'm talking about my man, Spencer Rattler. Well, I don't think he's really my man, but I want to see if this dude can get this egg off his face.
All right, we're talking about some college football quarterback, Spencer Rattler, on the other side. All that and more right here on Ball Don't Lie on 104.9 The Horn.
Ladies and gentlemen, guys and dolls, the main event of the evening for your entertainment and pleasure.
Mike, you have to be so combative.
Now, I probably wouldn't say this in front of white folks, but in front of y'all, I'm going to speak my mind.
He has emotional anger issue problem.
Hey, are you Dirty Mike and the boys?
I'm Mike Lowry.
Michael!
Oh, that's funny. Michael!
Welcome back on the Blue Monday edition of Ball Don't Lie. It's your boy Hardball Hard. You can follow me on Twitter at Hardball Hard. You can follow my man Rod Babers at Rod Babers. And you can follow the man behind the glass at It's Patrick Davis on Twitter. We love it when you guys participate with us on the show and give us your thoughts. You can do that on the Specs text line, 512-337-3776. And I know this is going to sound crazy because we are in Longhorn country. We talk a lot of college football, but I want to talk about Spencer Rattler, man that was north of the river. And at one point, he was supposed to be the golden boy. We just talked about how he's ranked number 8 in the top 25 quarterbacks that are going out this year, brought to you by 24/7 Sports. Spencer Rattler, is this going to be a fall from grace or a setup or a setback for the greatest comeback in sports? He was highly recruited out of Arizona, number one quarterback coming out of Arizona. He was featured on the Netflix documentary, the 2020 version of QB1, the story of Beyond the Lights. And during that time I was watching it, I became very frustrated with him. You know why I became very frustrated with him? Because number one, he was the alpha of the team, which is great. You got to be the alpha. You're the quarterback. You're the starting quarterback. But he wasn't elevating any of his teammates. He wasn't working with any of his teammates. And this is one of the things, too, that I was always curious about is, you know that cameras are on you. You know you're being followed, and you're still being condescending to the backup quarterback. Mm-hmm. You're being condescending to the wide receivers, the running backs, the linemen, the people that are supposed to be taking care of you. You were having rough discussions with your high school coach. You were being recruited nationally. You were one of the number one recruits in the country. And it was real interesting to me. And I always thought, I said, how is he going to be once he gets on a college campus? Because, Rod, you know this very closely. When you get on a college campus, you're the new guy. You're the fish. You're the young fish in there, and you're supposed to learn and be respected and be respectful to your teammates because they've already put in the work. Mm-hmm. They've already been here. They've the ones that have been winning those championships. You hadn't done anything. Now you're going to be here, and you're supposed to be the new hotshot quarterback, but you end up losing your job, honestly, to a transfer named Jalen Hurts when you first got there. So you had to sit out, and everybody kept talking about, okay, here's how this is supposed to happen. This is what you're supposed to do. And you're still kind of bucking the system. You got one of the greatest minds as a head coach, offensive coordinator, and Lincoln Riley. You have some of the most electric players in the country at Oklahoma. I don't know how they're always wide open. I just never understood that. Why was CeeDee Lamb open all the time?
All the time.
I'm like, how is he that wide open? And we saw it all the time. But then you start looking at what's going on, and he was supposed to be the number one pick in the draft. We've already talked about that. He's gone 15-2 as a starter in college, and he completed over 70% of his passes. But he still lost his job in the Texas game, and you brought it up about PK, how he created this adversity for this kid, and he seemed to never get over that.
Mm-mm.
Every time, there was a bunch of games during the middle of the season when he was still named the starter, and he still couldn't answer the call. I think PK set the the game plan for everyone else to follow on how to stop Spencer Rattler, because he likes to hold on to the ball a little too much. He wasn't quick to get rid of. He's got a great release. He throws a beautiful ball.
Yeah,
but I think he was so used to having people open, and then when those windows got a lot smaller for him, he kind of fell off. And then you hear about him being rude to the fans because they were booing, "We want Caleb, we want Caleb."
I remember that.
And he was, off put by that and didn't want to really talk to anybody. And so he got benched. And then all of a sudden, you got high expectations again. You're QB1, top in Arizona, Heisman Trophy hopeful. And now you lost your position to Jalen Hurts and Caleb Williams. So now you hit the transfer portal. And where do you decide to go? Not back to Arizona, where some thought he would be comfortable to his home state, where he could be around family and friends and people that love him and kind of lifting him back up to those high expectations. But now you go from the most successful program to one of the ones that are trying to rebuild themselves, change their image on what's going on. And you're going into the SEC West, where they went 7-6 last year. They went to a bowl game. That's the only reason why they were 6-6 when they went to the bowl game. They won their bowl game, and that's why they're 7-6. That's why they were able to finish above 500.
Yep.
But then you also look at it and you say, will this be a redemption for him? Because this is the only team in the SEC, Vanderbilt was the only team that had a worse offensive performance in the SEC than South Carolina.
Man.
They had the fewer plays of 10 yards or more, they scored fewer points, and they had fewer yards. So this is a huge redemption type of year for Spencer Rattler. And my biggest question is, if you couldn't make it work with Lincoln Riley, whose offense seems to be easy to pick up as far as a quarterback is concerned.
It's quarterback friendly.
Yeah, it's definitely quarterback friendly. And now you're going to go to the SEC West, and you're going to be playing against SEC teams that obviously are going to be a lot faster, as most would say. I mean, we see in the draft, there's a lot of people getting drafted from the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think you're going to rebound with this? Now, anything can happen. And change of scenery, change of thought process. He's got his old former teammate there with him, tight end Austin Stogner. He's got an opportunity to go into a new place, new thought process. My biggest question to everyone is, do you think Spencer Sanders has been humbled enough that he can go in there with the right attitude to be able to take over as a big-time college quarterback in the SEC?
That's a good point, though, about obviously Spencer Rattler's, you know, time with Lincoln Riley. He's in one of what is considered to be one of the most prolific and one of the most compatible systems with a quarterback. And it was very malleable, right? You saw it with Jalen Hurts thrived
Thank
in that
you.
System.
Kyler
Murray thrived in that system. So Baker Mayfield thrived in that system. So for him to actually be the first hand-picked quarterback for Lincoln Riley, too.
The
rest of those guys were transfers that, you know, they brought in that, you know, he obviously ended up inheriting through the transfer portal, so he didn't have a lot of time with them, and I think that ended up getting Lincoln Riley even more street cred because he didn't have a lot of time and still developed those guys. But I'm with you. He was the one that was handpicked as a high school prospect by Lincoln Riley, considered to be the number one overall pick at one point as a prospect that he was going to project to that level, and then ends up washing out. And to have PK's defense end up being the one that exposed you is also a problem. So I'm with you. I think it's the change in attitude for him personally, to me, is more impactful potentially for his overall evaluation and rate of development than the system that he's playing in, because obviously he should have been able to thrive in that system, but he wasn't in the right frame of mind.
Right.
He wasn't in the right state of mind. And the fact that his not only the student body turned against him, but the locker room turned against him.
The locker
room
became the locker room.
You lost the election.
Right.
You lost the election to Caleb Williams, all right? And they decided, now Caleb Williams, we'd rather follow him. He's got to work on his leadership skills. He's also got to work on whatever it was that held him back. And I think it was more of his attitude. You talked about that from the jump. It always been shown that he's a very brash, arrogant, cocky person. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But that can come back to bite you.
And it did. And that's one of those things that I know, I appreciate you bringing up the election part of it, because it is a court of public opinion as well. And when your student body is looking at you in a totally different light, regardless of what we as the media are looking at you, when we hear how you treated your student body, I always take it back to what I saw on film. I saw you in Netflix. I saw you talking down to your teammates, making fun of them, not elevating them, and then just trying to big league them, basically, is what he was doing, to the point that you were coming in. And I know that some of your teammates that you ended up having at Oklahoma saw that as well. So they knew what type of person you were before you got there.
Yep,
and then the first sign of your slip being able to be shown, it creates animosity towards everyone. And then you have to try to pay the cost to be the boss. So that is where I'm looking at. And I hope for his sake, that he does understand humility. I hope he understands that this may be his last choice, because a lot of times talent doesn't matter.
It's not enough.
It's not going to always – it'll get you in the door, but
enough.
It won't keep you on the roster.
Yeah, it's not enough.
And that is where I'm looking at him and saying, all right, my young man, I hope that you understand that this may be your last ride. You were supposed to be the guy the number one overall pick, or at least the first quarterback taken off the board this mm-hmm. past year, and now you are in the transfer portal. So hopefully he understands what this is all about. And I wish this young man the best. Now that he's out of the Big 12, I'm really going to pay a lot more attention to him because I want to see how his growth pattern has changed.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's still considered to be one of the top prospects, coming out of college at the quarterback position. But if he regresses another year, if he regresses again, he'll still get drafted, but he'll get drafted late in the draft. He's still got a chance to be a first-round pick.
Yes.
A lot of people think that's crazy, but if he shows out at South Carolina and plays really well, he's got a chance to be a first-round pick at quarterback.
Yeah.
Because at one point, they projected his ceiling to be that high.
No doubt.
The number one overall pick. And they still have that, but that's a ceiling. That's what you could be. That's potential.
Yeah.
How do you fulfill that potential? The work ethic, the attitude, right? The leadership. You're in a natural leadership position and you're not a great leader, that's a problem.
Yep.
That's
a big problem.
That is a big problem.
Yeah.
And if your disposition and whatever your attitude, if it is to the point where it is it puts your fan base and your peers or the other students on that university's campus, if they are now against you as a result of having some interaction with you all throughout your career there, and you didn't turn them into fans.
Right.
You turned them into like people that hate you now.
Like,
as a result of that interaction. That's a problem.
You were like the visitor for the other team.
Yeah, that's a problem.
That's how that turned in.
Yeah.
That is a Texas player going to the Cotton Bowl and walking through the Oklahoma side. That is what happened to Spencer Rattler on his own campus.
On his own campus. His own campus turned against him.
Oh, my goodness.
His locker room turned against him. His campus turned against him. And then his coach, I believe, was the last one to turn against him.
Yep.
He's got to – I'm not saying that's all his fault. It's not. But he's got to find out what his responsibility and role was in that disaster.
Ding, ding.
In that downside. He's got to – whatever it was.
Whatever
then,
it may
and
be.
Correct those things. And maybe he's already done that.
Yep.
All right. That's a good Harsh Knock Life. We'll come back. We'll get into Off the Record. As a woman who made a mind-boggling discovery during, I believe this was during labor. She's pregnant and she made a mind-boggling discovery. We'll talk about that, as well as give a shout out to a 100-year-old lady who decides to go skydiving. Man, I got to give it up for that, because that's something I couldn't do no matter how old I was.
I'm 50 and I ain't doing it.
Ain't never happening. All right, we'll come back. We'll discuss that in Off the Record right here on Ball Don't Lie on 104.9 Horn.
D.D. Mangudu,
once it's turned on, the sign will spell out Deli Cat Essen.
Well, I don't get a break my income.
Well, congratulations. Continue good sex in the Big East.
Thank you, Jimmy.
And boom goes the dynamite.
It's time for another edition of Off the Record.
Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. F***ing thing sucks.
All right, welcome back to another edition of Off the Record. This story is a strange story. I got it from the New York Post, but I also heard him talking about it on SNL this past weekend. A woman, Vic Ao Young, I'm sure I screwed it up, but I apologize. She's 42 years old. And apparently she discovered something about herself that was startling. So she first found out at the age of 16 that she had two wombs, but didn't discover that she also had two cervixes and two vajayjays until decades later when she became pregnant and went into labor. Now a mom of three, she recalls horrifying details from her teenage years, including, obviously, some stuff about puberty that was very unfortunate and difficult for her, very awkward for everybody. But, of course, if you're going through something like that. But she also pointed out that when she was in labor, she fell pregnant with her first child, Cleo, now 23, in 1998. And it wasn't until she gave birth that she found out that she also had two cervixes and a tiny, what she calls a second vagina. A tiny second vajayjay. Yeah. She said, I had to deal with a lot of things, but I didn't find it out until she went into labor and the doctors essentially through there was some difficulty, and they found the second vajayjay for this lady while she was in labor. This is see. This is what I'm talking about. We talked about this a couple weeks ago about the I Didn't Know I Was Pregnant show.
Yeah.
But it's a real show. I didn't make that up either. That is, I believe it's on the Learning Channel, if I'm not mistaken. I believe it's still on to this day. But at one point, I watched a crazy show. And ladies would give birth, and unbeknownst to them, they had been pregnant for 9-10 months before that. But it usually started with a bellyache or some bubble guts and... I can't tell you how many times it ended up being a thing that was on the toilet, unfortunately. And then that's how it went down because they didn't know they were pregnant. And they had stomach issues and went to the toilet, boom, and that's how it went down. Sometimes they went into labor and then found out, like, oh, man, I'm going into labor. And they were smart enough to call the hospital and go, oh, hey, I need to come in because I think I'm having a baby. Oh, there you go. Boom. And I don't know how it happens, but I think that, you know, some women, their body's just very different, very different. This is proof, just very different, very different. She didn't find out until she gave birth that she had another vajayjay.
That,
mind blowing. See?
It's yeah.
Very complex stuff going on down there.
So, to say the least. Yeah, I too saw this story, and I'm still confused about how this story is just now coming out.
What do you mean?
Well, if she knew she had it at 16, and she's the mother of three.
Oh, I think like now she's like telling people finally.
But I mean,
like she finally,
I
like
know HIPAA is involved
she's
with this.
Opening up about it finally,
yeah.
When I think she at first wasn't opening up about it. That's all. I think now it's like, yeah, now she's comfortable enough to discuss it. That's all.
Yeah, it's something to behold for sure. I mean, it's
something to behold.
When you, but my
something
other question
to
is,
behold,
what was her husband thinking? Like,
well, he didn't know either.
How did he not? That's my whole thing. That's my biggest.
How did he not know?
Exactly.
I don't know. That's a great question. I don't know how he didn't know. Was he as surprised as everybody else in the room? She was surprised. She didn't know. How was he supposed to know when she didn't know?
There's so many.
She didn't know.
But
what is she? How, she's supposed to know before he knows.
Very true.
Exactly.
But after
she's a grown woman that didn't know she had two of them.
But Rod, you and I both know. There's a lot of things we find out during our times together.
I think I know myself pretty well.
And I would be able to say, hey, honey, we might need to talk about something that I've noticed.
Maybe you're more observant than her husband is, or her baby daddy, whoever he is.
Problem number two.
More observant. But like I said, she didn't know either.
Yeah, but
can't get mad at him for not knowing when she doesn't know.
But that's a conversation that you and I are definitely going to have when you find out, because I'm sure there has been time spent.
Okay. Yes, observing.
Very observant.
Observing.
Yeah.
My boy is like, I don't know, maybe his eyes are closed. I have no idea. I know what his technique is. I know what's going on there. What you saying? Like, he obviously didn't know. And she didn't know. I'm surprised. You were surprised he didn't know. I'm surprised she didn't know.
Maybe she did know, and she didn't know what it was.
But let's,
you know what I'm saying? Some people get shy.
This is why health class is so important in high school. We need health class.
If we're going to say she didn't find out until she was in labor, that means all the checkups before this, professional doctor who was supposed to be looking down there and making sure everything's right did not notice.
Right.
So I do not put that on a boyfriend or a husband at that point, because he is not a trained doctor to go, hey, man, there seems to be two of this.
Hey, how many have you seen, though? You've seen enough of them to know.
You've seen like, no, exactly.
That's
no,
my point.
But no, Patrick makes the best point.
That's the fact
that she went, have you ever been to an OBGYN and all of them failed you?
And yes,
right?
All of
this every
should
OBGYN
be fired.
She exactly ever went
right.
to in her life failed her.
Yes.
Then I agree with that.
So, yeah, so if no one else had ever mentioned it before, a doctor in a well lit room.
Yes.
Just making sure. Like, she was pregnant. So they're really having to do checkups.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
No, you're right.
And if they missed it, I don't find a boyfriend at night being like, you know what? Let's do science projects. I don't know if he's going to figure that out.
No. I'm not. I was saying, I think that you're right. The gynecologist,
is the number
or
one.
Or he or she are the number one culprits here.
Yes.
They are to blame.
Yep.
And they should all be, honestly, they should be reprimanded. Yep. They really should be at this point. She's like, yeah, you got to be suspended for a year. You didn't,
did she go to that?
You didn't catch that?
Did she go to that kid who wore the lab coat and was being an OBGYN?
Doogie Howser examined her. He's like, I never seen one of
that one doctor from Florida, the brother with the glasses.
wore the lab coat and got away with it for like 3 months.
I don't know, but you're
and
right.
I think he was an OBGYN.
Yeah, of course he was.
Of course he was.
Yeah. I didn't get that. Yeah, that's real. Yeah. I don't know. I get you on the husband, but I'm saying she probably could have known too.
Yeah, the OBGYN, I agree with you on that. OBGYN, that should have been the first one to give the answer. The
first one to get it. Yeah. All right. Yeah. There you go. But
just
she's doing all right.
At a textbook. She's looking back at me like, I don't know what is happening right now, but I flipped through 12 chapters and nothing looks like that.
So it's like health class also failed everybody here too.
I think health class. Fine. If there's one person with this, I don't think we all need to learn. Like, hey, by the way, check. Is there another one?
Yeah.
I'd like to have think that I would have known, but I'd have figured it out. Yes. I'd like to have think that I'm observant enough, but I'd have been like, oh, sweetie, this is very different.
Right.
It's very different than what I'm usually accustomed to. And by the way, nothing wrong with that, by the way.
Exactly. All right?
Not that it's going to stop, but I just want to let you know what's going on.
That's why the question was going to be had.
All right. We'll come back. We'll get into Mavs losing game 3. We'll also talk about the Heat and the Celtics game 4 coming up tonight. All that and more right here on Ball Don't Lie on 104.9 The Horn.